Once upon a time, a young woman went to visit her mother. Yeah. You have a hand up? Oh, that's okay. Once upon a time, a young woman went to visit her mother and told her about all of the challenges, all of the changes taking place in her life. And oh my gosh, she didn't know what she was going to do. She didn't know how she was going to make it. It seemed like there was just one thing right after another, and she was tired of fighting and struggling and tired of the changes. Her mother took her to the kitchen and, being a very wise woman, said, without a word, she went to the stove and she put on 3 pots of water to boil. In the first, she placed carrots. In the second pot, she placed eggs. And in the third, she placed ground up coffee beans, fair trade. After a few minutes, she turned off the burners. She fished out the carrots, put them in a bowl. She fished out the eggs, put those on a plate, and she ladled out the coffee into a couple of cups. The mother brought her daughter over and said, "What did you see? What do you see?" So the daughter came over and felt the carrots and noticed that they were soft and limp. The mother then asked the daughter to take the egg and break it, and after pulling off the shell, she observed the hard-boiled egg. Then the mother asked the daughter to sip the coffee. And the daughter, who was a bit of a coffee addict, smiled and loved the aroma and the flavor of that fair trade hand-ground dark roast coffee. Then her mother explained that each of these objects had faced the same challenge, had faced the same changed environment, the boiling water, and each had reacted differently. The carrot, going in strong and hard and colorful and unyielding. But after a while, it became limp and soft and kind of flavorless and bland. The boiling water was clearly the victor. The egg, before going into the water, seemed symmetrical and whole and complete in its shell that protected its soft fluid insides. But faced with the challenge of the water, the egg tried to resist, and the challenge was too much. The symmetry of that outer shell was now easily cracked and broken, and what it tried to protect had become hard and different and no longer fluid. Its basic nature had been changed by the challenge of the boiling water. And yet the boiling water was undaunted. It was the victor. The ground coffee beans were unique, however. After they went into the boiling water, they changed the water. Instead of attempting to resist or avoid the water, the coffee embraced the boiling water. And by embracing the water, embracing the challenge, something interesting happened. The nature of the coffee did indeed change, but it was enhanced. It was improved. And the boiling water was also changed. In embracing the challenge, the coffee became something greater than it was. And for the first time, it was the boiling water that changed by being embraced rather than resisted. "So which are you?" the mother said to the daughter. "When you're challenged, when there's a big change in your environment, in your life, how do you respond? Are you a carrot, an egg, or a coffee bean?" When faced with challenges, how do we, how do our congregations respond? Do we wilt? Do we lose strength? Do we become hard and stiff and brittle? Or do we become even better and change that situation around us? Are we carrots or eggs or coffee beans? Now, yesterday we saw that change is not ahead, change is here. And our task is to figure out how to address those challenges. Now, we have two major critical questions that we're facing, that all faith traditions are facing. Will trends in United States culture lead to people becoming more receptive to organized religion, or will trends lead people to become more resistant to organized religion? And will people's openness to the spiritual life increase over the next few years, or will people's openness to the spiritual life decrease? Research on these two questions have been driving the Faith Formation 2020 researchers, who are the ones that have been really looking at those driving forces that I laid out for you yesterday. And these researchers looking at these driving forces have come up with four possible responses to these critical questions based on this grid, which actually shows a couple of dichotomies here, or can't think of the right word right now, but it goes from here to here and here to here. Okay. Continuums! Yes, thank you, you win the prize. All right. The continuums between receptivity versus resistance, and the between organized religion and hunger for the spiritual life. So based on these four continuums, they created four scenarios. Scenario one, where people, there's vibrant faith and people are fully engaged in the spiritual life. Number two up there, spiritual but not religious, which is what we're going to talk about today. Scenario three, the unaffiliated and the uninterested, the nuns. We're also going to talk about them today. And then scenario four, the uncommitted to spiritual life but participating in organized religion anyway. And I think that describes my spouse when I drag him to potluck dinners. But those are the four possible responses to those two critical questions and the continuums that we saw. There we go. So today we're looking at these two elements that you can't see, the no religious affiliation, the nuns, and the spiritual but not religious. Okay, driving force, no religious affiliation, the nuns. I introduced you to that yesterday. Today we're going to dig into it a little bit more. 22.8, let's say 23% of all American adults claim no religious affiliation as of 2014. And that is a rise from 16% in 2007. 36% of all young adults, the 18 to 30s, they claim no affiliation as well. It's larger there. And there are major generational shifts in attitudes that are going on behind these numbers. The Pew report showed a very rapid rise in the number of Americans who claim no religious affiliation. I mean, that's 1/5 of all Americans who claim none. Now, researchers who monitor religious trends have noted for several years now that the percentage of Americans who don't claim a religious tradition was growing at what they considered an astounding rate. You know, demographics and researchers are astounded by certain things. But even these researchers were surprised by this rapid shift in just 7 years. The percentage of American nuns, N-O-N-E-S, right, grew 8 points in 7 years. And demographically speaking, that is huge. In 1990, it was only 8%. Now here it is 23%. You get a better grasp of how quickly that's been moving. Now the big question is why? We know it's happening. Why? And there are a lot of different reasons why people might disaffiliate from any religious body. We know people who have simply stopped believing in any religious claims whatsoever. And the study noted that 6% of all Americans claim to be atheists or agnostics. And well, even some of them, however, are joining some religious organizations. There's a growing atheist church out there, which is an amazing phenomenon. But the Pew studies also find that many of the 46 million unaffiliated adults also claim to be spiritual in some way. Their relationship to faith is nuanced. 68% of the nuns say that they believe in God. 2/3 of the nuns say they believe in God. 58% of the nuns say they feel a connection with nature and the earth that is spiritual. 37% say they think of themselves as spiritual but not religious. And 21% of the nuns pray every day. They pray every day. This is just, once again, another little graph from Pew showing the move in 7 years from 35,000 up to 57,000 Americans in the unaffiliated group. That's what I mean by numbers. You know, percentages look small. Numbers, or millions, pardon me, millions. Numbers look bigger, especially if you get the denomination of the number right. And then again, that little graph we showed yesterday where we have the unaffiliated becoming, you can't even see this little thing, but becoming the second largest religious group in the United States. The unaffiliated are not just millennials, and they're not just growing among the young adults. This shows different generations and the change from 2007 to 2014, And we can see that in every single American age generation, there is a rise, a shift towards the unaffiliated. 2% in the silent generation. Baby boomers up 3% in the unaffiliated. Generation X, 4%. Older millennials, 9%. And younger millennials, well, they're 36% right now. So it's everybody. And this is another graph just showing over the years from 2007 to 2012, the rise in all generations. Some of us learn better with pictures, and I like my pictures. Okay, so why? Why is this happening? Now, some say that it has to do with some of the family influences. The nuns are disproportionately coming from families that did not have religious affiliation. Okay, so that makes sense. Many are children of boomers who at one point or another discarded their religious affiliation. That makes sense. But at the same time, the increase in nuns is also seen among adults whose parents were very religiously observant. So something else is going on here. You can't just attribute it to poor parenting or non-religious parenting. Something's going on. The Pew survey from 2012 found that all of the nuns, older or younger, have this complicated relationship with organized religion, as I noted before. And then Pew asked nuns for the main reason that they left their former religious affiliation if they'd had one. Now, the most popular response was they don't believe in God anymore or the teachings of the church. Okay, fine. Nuns think that religious organizations are too involved with money and power, too focused on rules, too involved in politics, especially right-wing politics, and that they're too hypocritical. Concerns about LGBTQ issues were also seen to be a catalyst for many to decide to leave or question organized religion. And yet, an overwhelming majority also think that religious organizations help bring people together and build communities and play an important role in helping the poor and those in need. And the Pew report said a majority of the religiously unaffiliated clearly think that religion can be a force for good in society. A force for good. And at the same time, overwhelmingly, 88% of the nuns say that they are not actively trying to find any kind of religious organization. They're not looking for one that would be right for them. They aren't going in the doors. They aren't investigating. So the bottom line here is a huge, growing number of Americans who reject organized religion as the sole or maybe as the most valuable means of furthering their spiritual growth. But they're impressed by those who do good in society. Now, I want to show you a little CBS video about the rise of the nuns that was back in December and January 2013, December 2012, right after Sandy Hook massacre occurred. CBS in this looks at the new atheism as well as the complaint that organized religion is too involved with money and power and politics. So in this video, the nuns are reported as 20%, but we all know now that they're 23%. Come on.
It's not just in Newtown, Connecticut.
But in churches and synagogues and any other building of faith, the question why is being asked over and over this morning. In times of both heartache and happiness, we turn to our faith for guidance and comfort, but increasingly how we think about our faith is changing. According to a new study by the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life, the nation's spiritual landscape may be becoming a little less religious. Some 45 million people, that's one-fifth of the U.S. adult population, now say they belong to no church in particular. 6% of them are either atheist or agnostic.
There's a yearning to find like-minded people, to be able to have a conversation that's not taboo.
How did you end up finding the group?
We met Red McCall last month. He's the president of an atheist group in the buckle of the Bible Belt, Oklahoma City.
We're not anti-religious, but we're pro-secular.
In just the past 3 years, membership has jumped from just 300 members to well over 1,000.
I do think it's getting better.
Shelley Reese, a college professor, is one of them. She says the public mood on atheists is changing, even here.
There were still people when we were marching in the parade at Halloween yelling out, "You're going to hell," and stuff like that. But there were more people who weren't. And I think that's going to keep going. I think that's the trend.
Researchers call them the nuns, those who check the nun box when asked to describe their religious affiliation. And they've doubled since 1990.
We're not necessarily becoming more secular, are we?
I mean, maybe a little bit.
Carrie Funk is the senior researcher on that Pew study and says it's a complicated question because being unaffiliated isn't necessarily the same as not having faith.
68% of the unaffiliated say they believe in God or a universal spirit. More than a third describe themselves as spiritual people, but not religious people.
And a good portion of them still say they pray.
And a good portion pray at least daily.
So if it's not God, or the thought of a higher power that's turning people off, just what is? The study suggests that it's organized religion, with respondents overwhelmingly saying many organizations are just too focused on money, power, and politics. Protestants have suffered the greatest decline. They now account for just 48% of religious adults, making it the first time in history that the United States doesn't have a Protestant majority.
Every time I walk in here, I'm like, I cannot believe this place is this large.
How many people does it seat?
Over 4,000 people.
Evangelical churches aren't immune either.
All right, is everybody ready for...
The mega churches, once bursting at the seams, are a little less mega than they used to be.
We're seeing church attendance being much more inconsistent than I've ever seen it in my entire life.
Well, today, Lisa, we embark on a series...
Ed Young is the senior pastor of the Fellowship Church based in Dallas.
The Bible talks a lot about the enjoyment of sex.
He's hardly conventional, even preaching a sermon with his wife while sitting on a double bed.
It's God. Whenever he does that, he's saying, amen.
It's his attempt not at a gimmick, he says, but to reach those who these days find organized religion at its best irrelevant, and its worst intolerant.
I don't think we have been vulnerable enough. I don't think we have been real enough about issues and about life. You have to realize that the church is pretty much one generation away from extinction.
Indeed, it's the young. One out of every three persons surveyed, in fact, under the age of 30, who say they don't link themselves with any organized religion. Compare that with the greatest generation, where only one in 20 claimed no religious home.
We're in kind of a post-denominational phase, I think, in many ways, in the United States. So religion is very diverse, clear differences between Zen Buddhists and Mormons.
Charles Kimball is the director of religious studies at the University of Oklahoma. While he says most of his students still respect religious organizations as a power to do good in the world, it's often their stands on social issues, especially abortion and gay rights, that he feels are driving the young away.
The vast majority of students, even people coming out of pretty traditional religious backgrounds, don't see these as a big deal. They don't get what's the issue here. Don't understand it.
In my experience, a lot of my friends have become nuns because...
We gathered a few of his students together. All said they believe in God, but agreed that organized religion has largely failed to adapt to a changing culture. Carly Houtling grew up a conservative Christian.
I don't understand, like, how a loving God can send people to hell. I'm pretty sure if I disobeyed my parents, they would not throw me in the fireplace.
I go to a church here in Norman.
J.C. Fisher was raised Methodist, and he still goes to church, but only about once a month.
Because there's so much, like, bureaucracy and rules and things that a church has to do that don't necessarily fit with the beliefs or the tenets that they preach. So I've
sort of taken Martha Fulton grew up Baptist, went to Catholic schools, and for the moment attends a Methodist church.
And so, while I wouldn't say that
I'm really strongly affiliated with the church I go to now, I do feel that I get something out of it. And it's sort of like when a person says that they're single and looking rather than just single and not ever hoping to find anything else.
There are plenty of alternatives for those looking to worship in a more individual way. One of the most popular holiday services in New York City this time of year is a revival of the ancient solstice rituals at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine. Paul Winner leads that celebration.
The journey through the longest night is really intended to be symbolic of the catharsis of coming through the dark night of the soul.
And for those in Newtown, Connecticut, no night has ever been darker.
Dark times, like so many of our friends in Connecticut are having now, it's very hard to understand how we're going to reconcile that, how we'll come out the other side of it. But somewhere down deep, we hope that we have the optimism that we will overcome.
What is hope and optimism to some is faith and answered prayers to others. On this weekend in particular, as the conversation inevitably turns to the unimaginable, our thoughts of peace and human kindness bind us all as one.
I hope you heard the young adults there talking about their relationship with organized religion and the various nuances that each one of them had. We can't paint any of these folk with just one brush or think that they're all coming at this with the same worldview. It's very, as I said, complex and nuanced. But unfortunately, we're finding that a lot of folk are painting organized religion with one brush. This little quote on the screen right now comes from Putnam and Campbell. A couple of researchers did a book called American Grace. They interviewed young adult nuns and found that not only do they reject organized religion, but they do tend to paint all religious organizations and faith communities with that one brush. The very last sentence up there, okay, I'll read the whole quote because I know some of you have a hard time seeing it. The younger nuns think of religious people as hypocritical, judgmental, and insincere. Large numbers also say they became unaffiliated because they think that religious organizations focus too much on rules and not enough on spirituality. And underline, this youthful generation seems unwilling or unable to distinguish the stance of the most visible, most political, and most conservative religious leaders from organized religion in general. In other words, it's all seen as the same. Look at that last sentence again. Now, we Unitarian Universalists like to say that we're different, and we are. But younger generations in general are not distinguishing us from Bill O'Reilly. This is a real concern. And for me, it highlights the fact that we Unitarian Universalists and other religious, liberal religious faith traditions, our cousins, the UCC folk, in general have not been able to get our message out in a simple and easily received and coherent manner. People are becoming more spiritual and less religious. In addition to the nuns, there are a lot of people out there who claim to be spiritual but not religious. And this number, too, is growing. Pew notes that as many as 33%, as you heard, of all Americans identify as spiritual but not religious. Even those with a religious identity may also classify themselves as spiritual but not religious. And of course, a huge segment of the nuns identified as spiritual but not religious as well. So way back in April of 2010, the front page of USA Today claimed that 72% of all millennials claim to be more spiritual than religious, according to their surveys. And that was back in 2010. Now, to understand a little more about this culture shift, we need to look at the meanings that folk are now attaching to these words, religious and spiritual. Now, historically, the words religious and spiritual were considered kind of synonyms or complements to the same kind of religious impulse that we had. Within the last couple of decades, very recently, the word spiritual has come to be associated with the more private or individual level of thought, and especially experience. Experience. Not knowledge, but experience. And the word religious has come to be identified with the public realm of membership in a religious institution with some kind of official denominational or faith tradition teachings attached to it. Dr. Kenneth Pargament, in his article in The Psychology of Religion and Spirituality, noted that spiritual has come to mean the personal, but not necessarily private, beliefs and experiences that provide a sense of meaning and connection to the divine. And he says that religious has come to mean public beliefs and practices expressed communally within an organized religious setting. Diana Butler Bass, I introduced you to her stuff yesterday and her book Christianity After Religion. She went to a bunch of people, a bunch of groups in Texas and Toronto and New Jersey and California and Colorado and Sydney, Australia, for heaven's sakes, and asked them, what do you think when you hear the word spiritual? What do you think? And then, what do you think when you hear the word religious? Up on the board right now, those are the words that people associated with the word spiritual. Meditation, energy, searching, inclusive, intuition, wisdom, connection, experienced, you know, doubt, life, openness. I mean, wonderful, positive, wonderful words. She asked him, what do you experience? What do you think of when you hear the word religious? Orthodoxy, defined, rules, institution, boundaries, hierarchy, principles, dogma, certainty, organization, structure. An amazing difference. An interesting little side note to this, a study in the Journal of American Psychologists found that those who self-identified as spiritual had a loving, forgiving, and non-judgmental view of the divine. Those who identified as religious were more judgmental. So, next I want to show you another little video clip that's focused on the contrast between the spiritual and the religious. And this clip features Dr. Linda Mercandanta, who is from the Methodist Theological School in Ohio. And she has just produced a wonderful new book on faith without boundaries. And she is going to be the workshop leader at the Ohio Meadville Leadership Day on September 12th. In Columbus, put that one in your calendars. Everybody's invited. But she's going to be there talking about how spiritual but not religious values and worldview mesh with our Unitarian Universalism. And that one's going to be, I think, a very important workshop for our congregations. So let me show you the little video clip on that. Come on.
This morning on our special series, Do You Believe? We raise a question. Can you be spiritual without being religious? Well, Erica Hill's looking at that question for us. Erica, good morning to you.
Savannah, good morning. In our exclusive Today Do You Believe survey, 77% of respondents said there's a difference between religion and spirituality, with more than 70% of them saying it's actually more important to be spiritual than it is to be religious. But what exactly is spirituality? And what does a spiritual but not traditionally religious life look like? Well, that depends on who you ask.
Grateful that you got a new band.
For the Lula family, prayer and moments of gratitude are an essential part of each day and a cornerstone of their spiritual practice.
I'm grateful that I get to spend the weekend with you. To me, spirituality is just the best of what any religion is seeking to offer.
Raised by a Jewish mother and a Christian father, Susie Lula always found comfort in religious traditions. But it wasn't until she began attending the Agape International Spiritual Center that she felt a stronger connection.
When I found Agape, it felt more like a community where the spiritual essence that I was looking for was just infused.
And taking your attention away from where you will be going.
Founded nearly 30 years ago by Reverend Michael Beckwith, the Agape community now includes 9,000 members, united in their desire for a deeper spiritual practice.
I think that sometimes there's a misconception that spiritual people are airy-fairy, and I would say it's just the opposite. That a deeply spiritual person is trying to manifest their gifts and their talents in this world to change the world for the better.
We just love to give, so we just begin by just giving thanks.
At Agape, there is an emphasis on service. There is talk of God. There is prayer. But without the traditional structure many Americans may be used to.
Who or what is God to you? What does that mean?
God is a presence that's never an absence. This presence is everywhere, so you would never pray to God to come here because the presence of God is infinite. It's always here.
But for some, spirituality without the traditional framework of religion isn't enough. Reverend Linda Mercandante was raised in an interfaith, non-religious home. As a young adult, she too yearned for something more, embarking on a spiritual journey, and after much searching, found she felt most fulfilled by the structure of organized religion.
When I just saw myself as spiritual but not religious, I found it a little lonely, actually. There were things that I had big questions about but could not find the answers to.
Today, as an ordained minister and professor of theology, she has focused much of her research on people who consider themselves spiritual but not religious.
People do want to separate those two terms. I think they're more harmonious than people realize.
Nationally, about 11% of Americans describe themselves as spiritual but not religious. Mercandante interviewed people from across North America and from just about every racial, ethnic, and socioeconomic background. As diverse as they were, their feelings about spirituality were remarkably similar.
You would think maybe it was that they all had gotten hurt by organized religion, but that's not what I found. Often what they didn't like was some aspects of the theology. They felt that religion would require them to sign on the dotted line that would control their beliefs and their behavior.
What do you think draws people to what would be considered a more spiritual existence?
You know, there's an old statement that says that religion is for people who don't want to go to hell, and spirituality is for people who've already been there. And so oftentimes, people are on the spiritual path because they've had some very, very hard times. Religion hasn't provided an answer.
But that doesn't mean a spiritual person isn't open to finding an answer. For Michael Beckwith, that search is an essential part of the spiritual existence.
We're keenly aware that there are many paths to awakening, many paths to enlightenment.
I really want organized religion to take seriously people that are spiritual but not religious. And I hope that spiritual but not religious people can take seriously what organized religion has to offer them.
Kindness is my religion. That to me says it all. Kindness, I think that comes from the inside out.
A reminder that perhaps what matters most isn't the label, but the way we live our lives.
Ripple the dead tone. That's awesome.
Religion, as we know, can sometimes, and faith can be tough things to talk about. But what was interesting in speaking with a lot of these people is that they had all taken such interesting paths. And what they said is what they found a lot of the religions, whether they were raised in them or they decided to practice it now, they find they all have a common message of love and of taking care of those around you.
And gratitude, which I love that family's message.
It's a really nice tradition, yeah.
Erica, thank you so much. Tomorrow on this series, we're going to ask a question that's a provocative one. Does religion unite? Or does it divide? We're also going to talk with Timothy Cardinal Dolan as well.
Hey. I hope you put September 12th on your calendar. Now, as you can imagine, there have been a lot of essays and online discussion and blog entries around this whole spiritual but not religious controversy. Especially with the huge number of spiritual but not religious folk that are among the millennial, the young adults. And let's not forget, the millennials are now the largest single generation in the United States alive today, larger than the baby boomers. Boomers, you've been outdone. And we remember how the boomers changed society. Can you imagine how the millennials are going to be changing our society as they move into older adulthood, right? Now, since we're a little cramped for time, I'm not going to read you some of the blogosphere stuff because, you know, I'll do that this afternoon. But there are some really interesting discussions going on. One that I will highlight for you, though, is one by Reverend UCC Minister Reverend Lillian Daniel. And she's become quite famous in the blogosphere. One of her blogs, she described how she dreads it when someone finds out that she's clergy and they're sitting next to her on an airplane or something. And they want to tell her why they are spiritual but not religious. Now, you got to be warned because the tone of her blog was a bit snarky. And if you come this afternoon, she did an interview where she says why she was being snarky. She writes, "Well, next thing you know, he's telling me that he finds God in the sunsets. These people always find God in the sunsets and in walks on the beach. And sometimes I think these people never leave the beach or the mountains, what with all this communing with God and they do on hilltops and hiking trails. And, well, did I mention the beach at sunset yet?" She writes, "Being privately spiritual but not religious just doesn't interest me. There's nothing challenging about having deep thoughts all by oneself. What is interesting," she says, "is doing this work in community where other people might call you out on your stuff or, heaven forbid, disagree with you." Now, she turned this blog into a rather famous book right now, a pretty good book. But she doesn't have much sympathy for the spiritual but not religious folk. And this afternoon, I do have a short video with her. Another little, I'm not going to show it to you now. Oh, that one. I'm not going to show you either. You want me to? Okay. It's how to be ultra spiritual. Come on. Can you hit that for me manually? Thank you.
You recorded?
Yes.
I'm JP Sears. I'm ultra spiritual. And I'm going to teach you how to be ultra spiritual today. First, what you need to understand is being ultra spiritual has nothing to do with actually being spiritual, because no one even knows what that actually is. Being ultra spiritual means you look spiritual. So let's get started. Practice competitive spirituality. Silently / passive aggressively, you're going to want to compare how spiritual other people are to yourself. Judging other people to be less spiritual than you makes you a better person than them. And that's exactly what makes you more spiritual than them. Hey, Kevin. Do you see how unconscious that guy is? Jerk. Claim to be using your intuition when you're actually thinking about things. In fact, you're going to want to announce this to people every chance you get, because false intuition isn't true intuition until you get other people to believe that your false claims are actually true.
Hey, Deanna, my intuition just told me to give you a call. No, I didn't see that you had called me.
Talk about energy. You're going to want to integrate this into all your conversations. It'll seem meaningless to other people because it is. But don't let that stop you, though. I love energy. I love chi. I love prana. I love life force. I love auras. I love chakras. It's all vibration. Rebel against dogmatic religious terminology by dogmatically using spiritual terminology. You'll want to keep your eyes closed extra tight on this one, so that you don't see that you're actually still subscribed to the exact same belief system that you're rebelling against. Because now you're expressing the same concepts just with new words.
Jesus loves you. The universe supports you. I'll pray for you. I'll send you white light. God will provide for you. The universe is abundant. It's all about getting into heaven.
It's all about getting back to oneness.
Hallelujah.
Om. Say the word namaste any chance you get. You need to stumble your way through mispronunciations of it and awkwardly using it in social situations where it doesn't actually fit. Namas, namaste, 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 namasta, namasta, namaste. Hold eye contact for awkward lengths of time. You'll call it intimate. Everyone else will call it intimidating. Deny your pain. If you're going to be ultra spiritual, then you need to believe that being a human being and having these things called human feelings has nothing to do with a spiritual experience. You're breaking up with me? You've been sleeping with my best friend. No, I'm not hurt. It's all part of the perfection. It's all love. It is what it is. Use an exaggeratedly light tone of voice when you are talking to other ultra-spiritual people. This is kind of like showing your ID to get into a bar. It proves that you belong. It's all love. You just gotta follow your bliss. Do copious amounts of yoga, even though you have no idea why aggressively stretching your body and wearing $100 Lululemon pants relates to your spirituality. This one's good. I feel this one in my spirit. Ah, that's effective. It makes my hamstrings feel like they're tearing, which is helpful because I think hamstring is the French word for kundalini, which means this is making my kundalini more muscular. Reclassify all the ways you're irresponsible under the new heading, I'm a free spirit. Aggressively defend your position statement like you're an angel defending getting its wings cut off. A job? I don't have a job. I want to be free, brother. Can I borrow a couple bucks? Seriously, I haven't eaten for like 3 days. Please, be my abundance, man. In here, they say that if you subscribe to JP's YouTube channel, you'll become fully enlightened. So you might want to do that.
All right, sorry we're going over. I have just one little final thing that I want to leave you with before we adjourn today. Because many Unitarian Universalists have really been encouraged by the increase in the spiritual but not religious focus, especially among young adults. We say, yeah, hey, they're going to come in our churches. After all, their values are so similar, if not completely shared in many areas. And many think that if we Unitarian Universalists just do a better job of letting the spiritual but not religious know that we exist and are truly welcoming, that they will naturally walk in our doors and want to join a UU congregation. And there is some truth there, because we really haven't done a very good job of letting folk know what we believe and what we value, or that we even exist, or where the congregations are. We tend to hide our congregations on the outskirts of town in some dead-end road with a tiny dark sign that marks the driveway, maybe. I've been there. I know. I've passed by the driveways many times looking for congregations. So if we were really open in a big way about expressing our values and who we are, then we might get more visitors coming in. And we'll talk about that on Friday. But overall, I don't think we can wait around and expect the unaffiliated nuns to come knocking on our doors anytime soon, no matter how welcoming we might be. The polls show they aren't looking. They're not looking for a congregation. 88% of the nuns say that they're not looking for a faith community. They have little or no interest in what's going on in our churches. So why should they come looking inside our buildings? We have to go out and meet them where they are. We have to engage them in new ways outside of our four walls. And that is our discussion on Friday. So that I want to leave you with. Go forth.